This is a HeadGum Podcast.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Welcome to another episode of Just a Tip, the podcast that's equally about its tangents as it is about its tips. I am your host, Megan Batoon, and I'm here today with Karen X Chang, and we talk about career transitions, being creators on social media, the repercussions of going viral, which Karen has done multiple times in multiple different avenues, and my favorite topic to discuss with creators, burnout. Enjoy. I know normal podcasts are like an hour, so I'm going to like try and shove everything because I want to know so much about your journey, because I just realized that I had seen your video, your viral dancing video. I had no idea.
Oh, man.
I had no idea until...
Same person. A lot of people were like, wait, what? That was you?
That's so...
Because I do something completely different now.
Yeah. I mean, that's... isn't that like life for real? Like, I feel like... both of us definitely have so our hands in so many different things. So like, where did you start? Where was like the inciting incident for like your creativity?
So I used to work for Excel, actually, for the spreadsheet company. And then when I quit, I decided to like sing a goodbye song to my coworkers. And the goodbye song was like nice. There was nothing like mean or rude in it, but still the fact that I sang a goodbye song was kind of obnoxious.
Totally.
And then I just like posted it on YouTube. And then most people, like, you know, when they, I don't know if you've ever been in a corporate environment, but people have these super long like farewell emails about like next, moving on, next steps. And I was just like, I'm just gonna send a YouTube link.
That's amazing.
Because I was just like kind of like, you know, a little more rebellious then. So I sent a YouTube link, and it was just me singing like goodbye to my coworkers. And then TechCrunch, this like major tech blog, picked it up, and then it became national news, and then it became international news. Like every single major publication, it was because the headline was Microsoft employee quits with song.
Wow.
And that's like such a good headline. So it wasn't, people weren't even watching the video, but it was just like, oh, that's a great headline.
Totally.
And so then I was like, oh my God, like that was my first taste of viral. And it was kind of scary because it wasn't one that I really like chose or controlled. It, you know, I wasn't like planning for this thing to go viral.
Wow, yeah.
I never had anything go viral before. I was kind of like, now I'm most famous for being a quitter. So, but that was like my taste, you know, and that was all about 10 years ago now.
Wow.
And then, and so then a few months later, I had moved, I was in a new job. I had decided to learn how to dance because I'd always wanted to learn popping and locking, yeah. But I never knew what it was called, and I never knew how I could go and learn it. Like, I wanted to do, I saw that really viral David Elsewhere robot video,
yes.
That was from like, I don't know, 15 years
ago
now?
Totally.
A long time ago, maybe even longer, maybe 20 years. But,
oh my God.
Like, I always wanted to learn popping and locking, but I didn't know what it was called. But then I moved to San Francisco, and I saw someone teaching it,
yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, that's exactly what I want to learn.
Right.
And so then I started learning, and I remember like trying to robot and being so bad at it. So I was just asked the teacher, like, how long does it take to get good? And he's like, you could get good in a year. I was like, okay, then I'll try. And so then I started practicing. And then I was like, you know what? I should really record myself so I can see my progress.
Totally.
And then I was like, oh, you know what? I should make a video that's like me learning how to dance over the course of a year. And I had this idea on like literally day 4 of me practicing. And so then I looked up on Google. I was like, person learning to dance in a year to see if anyone else had done it already.
Smart.
And then no one did. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go. I'm starting the clock now.
Right.
And hopefully no one else had the idea, like, you know, 6 months ago.
Totally.
Because then they'd beat me to it, right? So I spent the year, like, learning how to dance, making this video, and then putting it together and putting it out. And this time, I was, like, tried to make it go viral. So this time, I looked up, like, emails for a bunch of reporters and, like, contacted them. All cold outreach. Like,
interesting.
Then put it on Reddit. I like did all this. I was like, what are all the things I could do to promote it? Not knowing how to promote something on the internet, but just like, let me just think of everything I could possibly do and do it. And then it worked. And this thing went, I mean, I just remember I don't know if you remember the feeling the first time something of yours went viral, but like, I just remember this thing. Like, I think and this was almost 10 years ago, going to bed with like, 80,000 views.
Yeah.
And then waking up with a million.
Oh my God.
And the first time that happens, it's like, what the heck?
Totally.
Now it's not as big of a deal now because we make videos regularly. We have a larger audience. Views are much more inflated now. I feel like a million views 10 years ago was like, equivalent to a lot more views today, you know? So that was how that all happened.
Wow. So it's wild to hear that, like, you've gone viral in, like, so many different avenues. Like, I feel like when I started, I think when some of my, like, dance videos would go viral, well, I wouldn't even say viral. It would just be, like, much more than normal. And that was always really cool. But I've never done something that was, like, internationally viral. I don't think. Maybe I did like one Filipino video where I was like cooking Filipino food and it was like on the news in the mm-hmm. Philippines. And I was like, okay, mm-hmm. I'll consider that viral, sure. But mm-hmm. it's just wild that like you figured out how to market it, because even like doing a Google search, like after we started talking on Instagram, I was like, oh, I want to see everything about this girl. And then like when I type your name in Google, like it's the SEO is like working in your favor. Like there's like, you have like Pinterest, like links, you have everything that like, if I was better at my job, I would do. But like, I get so like bogged down by the promotion of it all that I'm like, oh, put on stories and then I'll be it. But it's like, I could be doing so much more.
Well, I think everyone feels like, oh, they should be doing so much more promotion. And I think it's so much like an energy thing. It's like, do you gain energy from promoting or not? And I gain energy from promoting to a certain extent. I also don't enjoy it as much, but I think I really enjoy the gamification of it. I really enjoy like trying to figure out how to crack it. And it used to be actually so easy to get press. All you needed, okay, so this was back in like, I don't know, maybe like 2014, around then, like it was a lot easier to make something go viral even if you didn't have any sort of audience or following. And all you needed to do was like come up with a concept that would make for a good news headline.
Got it. Yes.
So like girl learns to dance in a year. That's a good news headline. Or like I came up with just like a phone technique. And then I called it like this new selfie technique.
Mm.
Right. Because that was a good headline. So it's just like thinking about, okay, how can I make any concept into a good headline? And then you go and you like basically find reporters who have written about anything similar. And then you cold pitch them. And then I would honestly reach out to like 300 reporters.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it was, and then maybe get like three of them to write about you.
Wow.
So like the hit rate is very, very, very low, even for a video that's like pretty interesting. But if you could get even three reporters to write about it and then that article does well, then all these other reporters start writing about it.
Right.
And so then you could fairly reliably get something to go viral by following that format. And I don't think that many people knew about it, but it was so easy back then relative to how it is now. Now I feel like the only way to do it is you have to amass an audience and a following.
Right.
Because otherwise it is almost impossible to make something go viral. Unless, you know, you make something go viral on TikTok, which people talk about as if it's easy, but it is so hard.
To go viral on TikTok?
Yeah, it's so competitive.
What do we consider viral for TikTok or Reels? Like, what's the view threshold? Is it like 5 million, 8 million, or more?
I would say viral on any platform is just like a much larger number than your follower count.
Okay, okay.
So that's how I would define it for anyone. So like if you have 10,000 followers and you have something, a video that gets 100,000 followers, well, that's viral for you.
Understood. Yeah. So it scales depending on the individual.
Right. Because there's no like industry-wide definition of viral. And so I think we should just have our own individual definitions.
Yeah. I really like that. I never thought of it that way. But yeah, I feel like the stuff that's gone viral for me on Reels or TikTok specifically is like something that meant nothing to me. Like I didn't put any effort into it. It was literally my cat doing something. And it's like, and then I do like a stop motion or like a crazy time lapse and nothing. And it's like,
isn't that so frustrating?
Yes. And that's how it was in the dance.
Infuriating.
Oh my God. In every single avenue. Yeah. I do it like with YouTube. Anytime I spend like a ton of effort doing something, Reels, dance pieces, like my favorite dance pieces get like zero views compared to my Kim Possible video, which was still fun, but like it took a day, you know, to choreograph.
Right. Right. So that phenomenon of like, oh, I just did this random thing and it totally blew up on TikTok has never happened to me.
Oh no.
Because I put a lot of effort into every single thing I put out. Like so sometimes the thing I put a lot of effort in blows up.
Yeah.
Usually it doesn't. I mean, I feel like people have this perception of me like, oh, everything you touch turns to gold and goes viral. But like, no, the vast majority of stuff does not. You are seeing the stuff that goes viral by definition.
Right.
But like, trust me, most of the stuff I'm putting out is not going viral.
Yeah, I mean, all your content is like, I look at it and I'm like, wow, that took so much effort and time. Like, I wish I had the dedication. Like, I have dedication, but it's scattered. Like, I'll do like a DIY and then a construction thing here, and then I'll design this thing and graphics here. And it's like, I feel like you are focused is what it comes off online of like, you can direct and you can do all these crazy tricks with the camera. And it's like, you're the expert in that. But like,
well, yeah, it's so interesting you say it. I mean, that word dedication, because I feel like the people who are consistent and making, because I look at your content, you're making a YouTube video every week.
Yeah.
You freaking banked all your content before you went on the Netflix show, which is incredible. We have to talk about that.
Oh my God.
You're doing this podcast. You have this whole empire. You're doing all these, you're on all these different platforms. And for me, I just literally do not have the energy for that. I don't. I'm not a super high energy person. So I have to just be like, well, what do I have the energy for?
Yeah.
I have the energy to focus on like one platform and to repost on others. So I have the energy to focus on one platform, which is Instagram. And I have the energy to repost on like TikTok and maybe YouTube Shorts and maybe Snapchat Spotlight when they are paying money.
Yeah.
But like, that's all I have the energy for. And I actually resisted being an influencer for so, so long. So the influencer thing is super new to me. I only started that like in the last 2 years. And I resisted doing it, being an influencer for so long. One, because I had judgment against it. I was like, ugh, I'm not an influencer. And then two, because I thought I could never be so consistent. Because I see people posting every day or every week. And I was like, I can never do that. And so what I figured out is, okay, I just need to post less frequently. But I try to make everything that I do like something that's really interesting and good and unique.
Yeah, I think that's a really smart way to do it, especially like I've been doing this for 10 years, the influencer world, which I honestly still have some resistance to it just because of the word influencer and even now content creator. Like it's not, it doesn't make me feel good. And so like for the longest time, like I didn't want people to call me a YouTuber because I was like, I that's one of the 19 things. You know, I didn't want to be just put into one smaller box. And then it was like, oh, but the content I'm making on YouTube feels a little bit more premium than just like a YouTube vlog, you know? And so I was like, okay, that doesn't feel right either. And then now that I saw like people on reality shows being content creators, it was like, well, I don't do that. So what is my title? Like I've always been kind of confused on what to call myself, but
it's so funny.
It's a whole thing.
There's always a negative, whatever we're called, there's always a negative association. YouTuber.
Yeah.
Always like seen as less premium. Influencer. Then it's just like, ugh.
Right.
Okay, now content creator. Content creator is, I feel like we keep having to rebrand the name.
Totally.
Because.
We do.
Because it keeps getting negative connotations. So we're just like, we'll just call ourselves something else now.
That's so funny. Yeah, it's like, I mean, but I guess that's like, I'm very grateful now to like be making this transition into interior design and like TV hosting. Cause it's like, okay, finally now like my title matches how I feel, you know? And like for you, creative director, like we have what we feel like.
Yes, exactly. I think for the longest time I called myself a director when it was a complete imposter syndrome thing.
Yes.
Because there's no like certification for director. There's no thing that you pass that now you're called a director.
Yeah.
You know, and so for the longest time, I'm just like, I'm just going to call myself a director and pretend until like, you know, I feel legit. And then I'm just going to call myself a creative director, even though that's actually kind of a high level position in an ad agency. But I was like, whatever, I'm just going to take it. And as opposed to like content creator,
yeah.
You know, because I mean, I am a content creator,
mm-hmm.
frankly, but I don't like to call myself that because it has a less premium connotation. So I was just like, I'm just going to put creative director in my bio instead.
Yeah.
Just going to try to make it feel more premium as best I can.
And doesn't it make a difference with like the people that are coming to your page to look at it? And also for you when like you're looking at your page and you go, yes, I feel like a creative director. Like that's how
yes.
I'm telling you like my name, essentially. If we were going to give titles,
yes,
that's our name.
It does. Okay, so I have a funny story because I've changed careers many times.
Mm-hmm.
And so at one of the career changes that I had, first one actually was from like project manager to designer. So I was to like graphic and UX, like UI designer. Mm-hmm. And I just remember why I spent like 6 months trying to teach myself design. And then I was trying to get a job as a designer. And so I was like, okay, I'm not ready, but like, I'm so ready to leave my job that let me just like try and get this job. So I would send applications and emails and being like, I'm looking for a job as a designer.
Uh-huh.
And no response, crickets. And then I just changed one thing in my emails, which was I said, I am a designer.
Yes.
And I just started getting like interviews. That was all it took. So you just have to like pretend sometimes until
totally,
you know, just call yourself the thing that you want to be. Just do it.
Yeah.
Unless it's like, unless it's something certified, like doctor or lawyer, don't do that.
Right, right.
But if there's no official certification, just call yourself the thing.
Yeah. That's what I'm learning too. I mean, like now when I made the transition from dancing and making YouTube videos, which are always like DIY based, but into like actual interior design. I remember someone telling like a friend of mine, it was like a comment on a friend's channel that I was maybe on in a video. And they were like, hey, like tell Megan that she can't call herself an interior designer. And I was like, what? Mm-hmm. And like, I looked it up and I was like, oh, I understand why they say that. Because like, in order to be a technical interior designer, you need a 4-year bachelor's degree with like codes.
Okay, so there is an official certification.
Yes. And so I was like, got it. Not going to call myself an interior designer, but I can call myself a designer because I've been graphic designing. I've been DIY designing.
Yes.
I've been doing interior stuff.
Well, there's no official certification for just designer.
Totally.
As well.
And yeah. Now that I'm in school for an actual certification, not a 4-year degree, but just a certification to do like residences, that's like what I think is going to hit my my imposter syndrome. I think that's what's going to like nip it in the bud. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't, mm-hmm. then we'll get there. Because I'm like, oh man, like I do feel, it's weird because like I do feel like I still have imposter syndrome, but I am like working on 3 actual interior design projects that I'm getting paid for. So I'm like, I'm doing this thing and I'm getting paid for it. So it's a job, but I still don't feel like that's like I can call myself that. It's so interesting.
I just made peace that I'll always have imposter syndrome, mm. no matter what. And I think it's normal and natural. And I read somewhere that like the more, in many ways, the more talented or successful you are in your field, the more you do have imposter syndrome. Because the thing is that your taste can always outpace your ability.
Yes.
Like you actually need that. Like you're counting on that. You're counting on your taste always being better than your ability. I think this is like an Ira Glass quote or something. Because that way you will push yourself to always be better. So you have an awareness of where all your weaknesses are. And so that is part of where the imposter syndrome is coming from. It's like, oh, but I have all these things that I still need to get better at. But then the opposite of imposter syndrome is I don't know if you heard the Dunning-Kruger effect.
No.
I don't know if I'm even saying that right.
I've never heard of it.
But it's basically the effect where everyone thinks that they're above average. And it's the effect where actually the less competent you are in something, the more confident you are, the better you can guard, because you actually have no idea what you don't know.
Totally.
So in that sense, having imposter syndrome is a good sign.
Right.
Because it shows that you are self-aware of your improvement areas.
Wait, that's so true. And I love it so much. That's, oh my God. Okay, that makes me feel a little bit better. And just, I don't want to always be living with it though. Like I guess not in the way that when you're like, oh, I've just accepted it. Like I would love to accept it if it didn't, Well, you know what? Now that I think about it.
But it affects you in a way that you don't want it to affect
yeah.
you.
Yeah. But you something yeah. that I think I've been struggling with is like the other people thing of like, I've always kind of cared what other people thought, especially being a creator yes. online of like, what are people yes. going to think of this video? And it's just like, okay, are they going to think I'm stupid, funny, smart, whatever it is.
Yes.
And so now when I'm thinking that like, I'm going down this design path, it's like everything I create has to be incredible so that other people can go, yes, she is mm-hmm. a designer. And it's like, well, who are you? Why yes. are you proving this to anyone other than yourself? And like, I know what I can do, but I think it's like the other people haven't seen my taste in my mind. Exactly like what you were saying. Like, I yes. know my trajectory. I know where I'm going to end up. I know what I'm capable of. And maybe other people do too, but I feel like until they see it, then I'm not credited. Like I'm not a certified credible.
Do you feel like that pressure has gone up since you've gone on this Netflix show and gotten a lot more like credibility, notoriety?
100%. There was one article yeah. that like I was crying over because we just announced that we are pushing out a second season, which we actually shot all in one.
Okay. I was like, so curious about that. I was like, wait. They must have shot this before the first one even aired. What
yes,
happened?
Yes, so we shot 16 episodes around the world and we didn't really know like how it was going to shake out.
Oh.
So it was like they picked like the first season, if you will, even though we shot it in one like chunk.
Oh.
And they put it out
smart.
To see if like people liked it. And if they did, then we would put out the next 8 episodes.
Oh, so the second half could have just been totally cut if the show tanked.
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, wow. Well, the show did phenomenally well, so not a problem.
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah, thank God. But the thing is, like, I've seen the second season. They showed us, like, a little host copy, like a private copy before it comes out. And it's better than the first, which I love. Like, the first one was really mm-hmm. cool and fun because you get to see the world and you can kind of understand, like, that there's so much out there. But since we were positioned as experts in our field in culture, design, and real estate, I feel like what I'm capable of wasn't put into the show because yeah. it's only 30 minutes yeah. and we're seeing 3 different properties. Like it's gotta be so yeah. bingeable to be on Netflix or any streaming platform that it's like, we don't get to see me designing, me working with my hands.
Yeah.
I'm not building these vacation rentals because we're just visiting. So it right. was like, how do I prove that I'm a designer without showing a certification in the beginning? Because in the beginning, like yeah. my Sears explainer says, I'm a DIY designer. And so people mm-hmm. are like, hey, she's the designer. Where's the design? Like at some points. Because
are people actually saying that?
Well, in some articles, it was like, is she a designer? Like we know it says she's a designer, but like, is she? And so like when that happened, I was like, I don't like this feeling because like,
yeah,
yeah. The more yeah. eyeballs, especially, I don't know, 50 million.
That lasers in on any sort of imposter syndrome you would have had and blows
totally
it up.
Like magnifying glass yeah. with an ant. Like, it's like, okay, we're going to yeah. scorch you until you get yeah. a degree. And so like, that was a really tough thing for me to be like, oh my God. Okay. Well, when the second season comes out, you'll see that I talk about design a lot more. And so I'm like, okay, thank mm-hmm. God for that. And hopefully mm-hmm. if we get a third season, which we have not shot yet, and we don't know if we're going to get, but if the second season does well, then by the time we go back on the road, if we do, then I will have my certification. So like, I'll be, okay. Yeah.
How much do you think you're getting the certification for you versus for like...
I think half and half.
Externally, what society needs.
It's like, I definitely think half and half. Well, the thing is, I'm learning so much through it that I'm like, oh, this would be great just for me. But I think definitely, mm-hmm. I don't know if I would say 50-50, but it's definitely close of like, I definitely want to learn all of the things that I need in to do this craft, like all coding and like all the terminology for different fabrics and like what the limited space or like the minimum space you can have between like a stove and an island, you know, because like actual function, there's so much of that I didn't really know before because I know what looks good. Like when you're creative, you can make anything work visually. But when it comes to design, and you know this, like user interface and user experience, like it has to be functional.
Yeah.
And so yeah. it's definitely, I'm learning a lot in that for me. And it definitely helps me. Like the more percentages I get in it, it makes me feel more validated. But when I have a certification posted on my wall, I think it's going to be like,
Exactly. A big exhale. You're going to have the official stamp. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I felt kind of similar to you where, like, the more, quote-unquote, success I get, the more... Okay, here's what it is. It's like... So for the past year and a half, 2 years, I've really focused on growing my Instagram followers. Yeah. And so I started about a year and a half, 2 years ago with, like, I don't know, 3,000 followers.
Wow.
And then now I have a million.
Yeah, you...
And it's
amazing.
It's from, like, constant... growth hacking. It's from like me actually legit trying to grow my Instagram. And I've realized that as my Instagram gets bigger and bigger, I feel so much more pressure and I censor myself so much
yes.
more on what I post.
Oh my God.
Because okay, here's what the feeling I'm trying to avoid. I don't want someone to go on my Instagram page uh-huh. and be like, I don't get what the big deal is. Like, I don't get why she's got that many followers.
Oh, no one would ever think that.
I think that stems from, like, me being judgmental, honestly, because I'm a pretty judgmental person, and I'm, like, working on being less judgmental. Mm-hmm. But I have gone on other TikTok accounts or Instagram accounts and been like, I don't get why they have the millions of followers. Their content is so boring.
Yeah.
And so because I judge other people in that way, then I judge myself on that way 10 times as hard.
Totally.
You know?
Yes.
So I think it's this feeling of like, and so as I was actually, I hit a million followers on Instagram fairly recently. And as I was approaching it, I started feeling like increasingly anxious because I'm just like, okay, I need to be performing at the level that this follower account indicates.
Right.
Like I need to, because I know there's so many incredibly talented like directors and editors who have way fewer followers. And that's for many factors, probably the main of which is that they just didn't prioritize growing Instagram like I did. You know, that's probably the biggest factor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people just have a natural tendency to judge people based off of those numbers and the relative numbers.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, but yeah, I was just thinking how, like, when I started out, when I had, the fewer followers you have on any platform, the more, like, free you are to explore.
Oh, my God.
And then the bigger you get, the more you just need to, like, okay, I need to really censor myself. And there's things that I make that I just never post because I'm just like, I don't really think it hits the bar anymore.
Oh,
whereas
nice.
2 years ago, I would have posted that. I would have posted that no problem.
Right.
But now I'm just like, I don't even post it.
Wow. So when you were doing growth hacking and a lot of, Instagram's multiple algorithms change so frequently, but I'm wondering like consistency, that was like what was fed to me when I started as a creator.
Yes.
Of like you have to be consistent. It doesn't really matter if
yes.
it's good or not, like in your mind, because yes. I'm always like you like really hard on myself and like I hold myself to a standard that is sometimes unreachable for me. But like all of my team was like just consistency, post 2 times a week, post every day on YouTube or 2 times a week on YouTube, every day on Instagram, like be everywhere all the time. And it was just like, back then I feel like I could because one, I had more time and I wasn't like yeah. burnt out and I didn't know the repercussions yep. of such actions.
Yeah.
But I guess what steps did you take in order to grow and how many times did you have to change it with the algorithm?
Right. So this is interesting because I also thought that in order to grow my following, I had to be really consistent. And I knew I was not capable of being consistent. Like I know myself, I know my strengths and weaknesses. I just know that not only can, and I'm not capable of it, but I just don't want to live that kind of life. Like it's just not for
yeah.
me. I mad at respect and admire people who are able to do it. I'm just not. But then I saw a few accounts that had grown pretty big and they were only posting like once or twice a month.
Mm.
And I was like, okay, I know it's possible.
On Instagram.
So on Instagram.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
On Instagram. And so I have this whole strategy for growing and I'm actually working on a 5-part series where I go into the strategy of doing it.
Cool.
And it might be out by the time this podcast goes out. I don't know. But basically to give you a recap of what I do, is I try to make fewer things, but I try to make each thing go viral.
Mm.
And then the way I make it go viral is not just trying to make it go viral on the Reels algorithm, because frankly, you and I have zero control over that.
Mm-hmm.
We post it and just pray for the best. So the way you can actually kind of control the virality a little bit is I send it to larger pages on Instagram. And I send it to the pages that are in my niche. So my niche is filmmaking. And so I will send it to like all the different filmmaking pages. And I've been doing that for the past 2 years. So now I have relationships with all of them. But when I started out, I didn't. So it was just like trying to build those relationships and getting them to post. And so I get them to post my work. And so that's basically a way to engineer going viral. You're not actually going viral, but it has the same effect.
Yeah.
Because you're getting way more views than you would have otherwise. And so I basically grew my account by doing this. And then if I had a video that had, was a little more funny that I could post it on, it was still filmmaking, but it was more of like funny filmmaking, then I could post it, get it posted on the bigger like humor pages, which are much larger audience yeah. than the filmmaking pages. If I had a filmmaking video that had a travel slant or I could put a travel slant on it, then I could get reposted on travel pages, which also have a much bigger audience than the filmmaking pages.
Interesting.
So that was basically how I grew it.
So when you reach out to these people and you send your, so you, it's like you post the video, you send it to them through like a DM and then you ask them.
Yeah. So there's a whole strategy for that. Okay. When you are smaller, it's a lot harder to get noticed because these pages, they do get tons of DMs. Uh-huh. So I would say actually email them because they get fewer emails. So it's easier to stand out if you email them. Also, a lot of these accounts, they it says who runs them. So go follow the person who runs them and just start interacting and like building a relationship with the actual person.
Yeah.
Because that personal account doesn't get as many DMs or messages. And then the really important thing is to only send them your really good stuff. So only send them the stuff that's actually performing like your top 10% of posts. Because if you actually send them something that's not that great and they decide to post it and it doesn't perform well on their page, they're not going to post you again.
Right.
Ultimately, you want it to perform well on their page because they're doing it so that they can get followers too. So like, let's make everyone win here, you know? And so I don't send every single thing that I post. But if I have something that's like, okay, this is going to do well, and I actually legit think it's going to do really well on their page, I'll send it. And that's why I have relationships with these pages now, because they're noticing, oh, every time we post her content, it seems to do well. And so that makes it easier and easier for me every time.
Yeah, and building trust.
Yeah.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Whoa, that's so wild. I've never really thought about, when I think of Instagram, I guess it came after YouTube for me. Like it was, mm-hmm. I had Instagram in high school, but I never used it like I am using now. So with YouTube, mm-hmm. it was like cross promotion and collabing was like the only way to grow, like back in OG YouTube days. And yeah. now it's like, yeah, I guess it, obviously Instagram is, I think, in my opinion, bigger than YouTube, especially for growth. Like YouTube is so hard to grow right now, but
I
do
Instagram.
Yeah. I think Instagram is much easier to grow on. I mean, especially with reels. I mean, like in my mind, it's
yes,
like
with real now with reels.
Yeah.
Before reels, Instagram growth was really,
it
hard.
Was definitely not cool yeah. for quite some time, but it's like,
it was a problem. Yeah.
We could all say it was an issue. If it's like thinking about Instagram and collabing that way and cross promotion, like I used to do on YouTube, that's something that I didn't really explore before. And I'm only starting now mm-hmm. to do the social part of social media. Because before right. it was like, oh, I make a YouTube video, I make small cutdowns, I put it on Instagram, I do this on Twitter, da-da-da. But now I'm starting to interact with a bunch of design pages and a bunch of like different prop stylists and interior people. And it's like, whoa, this is so cool. Like this is the social media that everybody else was using, you know, that I didn't yes. know about because I was just like, oh, I'm a company. I'm an empire putting all this stuff out because I make content everywhere. And it's like, oh, but you are forgetting about the reason social media exists is to be social and connect with people.
Yes. Yes. I also ignored Instagram for the longest time because I just thought it was a place for like super hot women. But then like I've recently said, okay, there's like really amazing design. There's really amazing artists. There's like insanely amazing creativity on here.
There is.
And you just have to unfollow all the like boring content and follow the people creating interesting stuff.
Truly. I'm trying to get back on the train of consistent posting on Instagram. Cause I guess if we were to like try to get our, I guess like our products tantamount to each other, like one of your filmmaking pieces and one of my rooms, like these things take a lot of time.
Yeah.
So yes. No one's going to wait for a room from me, you know, cause it's like, oh, it's a picture. Whereas like you could watch a whole document or a whole video of whatever, you know, like your content, it's like visual and it's moving. For me, it's like, okay, it's right. A picture. If people don't like interior design, they're going to scroll right past it.
Okay. But how long does it take for you to do a room?
I guess it depends on what I'm doing. So what I do now is like, making YouTube videos is the only way to like show the entire process. And then I can cut that down into smaller things. And if I was a better content creator, then I would do a lot of like reels for rooms, it would just be so much easier. But like I'm doing a rental property with a business partner of mine and we were demoing the house that we have. And it was like, okay, this is when we should do a reel. And it's like, ugh. I don't want to though. And he's like, I know, but we need to. And it was just like, it's like one of those things where it's like, love to see it, hate to do it. Like it's.
Yeah. Why do you feel like you have that resistance?
I guess it's just like, it takes me out of the art of it. And I think that's also why shooting YouTube videos when I'm demoing or designing, it's like, but this is like something that's like really precious to me and it's so passionate and it's so intimate. It's like, it's me and like a dirty chai and like just my candle. And it's me like picking out swatches and drawing and sketching. And it's like, I like that for me. It's nourishing. Right. It's refreshing. It recharges me. But to have a camera there and worrying about the angles to think like, oh, is this going to be a good enough video? Is this going to look good on Instagram?
Completely takes you out of the flow.
Totally. And that's, I think that's what's so hard about what I do now of like, I can do it, but I don't like to do it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I experienced a similar thing, even though my job is literally filmmaking, making these videos. My behind the scenes is usually staged. And what I mean by that is, I mean, it's not faked, but it's a recreation.
Totally.
So what I do is I get the shot first. I'm not shooting behind the scenes while I'm getting a shot because it's going to take me a while to figure out the shot. I've got to adjust all these things, change all these things. And then only after I get the shot and I'm happy with it, then I set up the behind the scenes tripod camera and then I redo it basically. And so that's the only way I found to do it because if I actually try and shoot behind the scenes the whole time I'm doing it, then it's going to take me out. Now for you, it's harder because you probably need to shoot like a time lapse of the room. So you can't just recreate it afterwards. But I totally feel what you're saying, which is like, well, documented behind the scenes takes you out of the moment of doing it, but you have to do it.
I know. And sometimes what I've learned after like so many iterations of burnout, and I would love to talk about that too.
Oh, we gotta get to the burnout. Stages of burnout.
Oh my God. But after this last burnout, what put me in this last burnout was I was like, I don't do TikTok and I need help so badly. And so like I found this really talented girl via DMs and she helped me with TikTok for like a month. And then when we were like building those videos, I was like, okay, I'll do reels because it's like sisters, not twins.
Same thing.
Yeah. And so it's like, okay, you do TikTok because you're better at that. I'll do Instagram because it's fun for me, like reels. And then I got so immersed in it and I was following all these strategy pages, all of these like analytics, everything. And it just broke me. Like actually one day I was just like, oh, like fuck all of this. Like I'm going to quit everything and I'm not going to do social media anymore because this is awful. And so that was like really intense. And so now that what I found that works for me when shooting content is putting like my phone on a time lapse because it's so simple with an iPhone.
Yeah.
And then I'll like demo a room or I'll put like a camera somewhere for like a couple quick insert shots if I'm doing something that's like monumental, like knocking down a wall or, you know, doing something that like I can't recreate. And then any And like, I just collect all of that footage and then I do a talking head and I sit down and I basically narrate the entire thing. And it's worked so much better for me because I don't feel like, sometimes you don't feel like you have like this social energy to be on camera, especially when you're doing labor things. So that's that's really helped me. But I was also thinking about what you just said about recreating what you can recreate. Like my boyfriend works in film for sound, and so he's always around reshooting things, especially when they're house shows. And it's like, yeah, half of that stuff is just inserts. So like once you do it, undo the last little bit, and then we'll just tape an insert of that. And I'm like, oh yeah, it could be way simpler than doing it, like in the moment. Yeah, so that's definitely what I've learned. And I guess like from every burnout, you learn something.
Okay, so I want to hear about your burnout.
Oh my God. I feel like...
And then I can go through mine.
I was like, my like chronological order of burnouts, I can't even really count them, but I know that there was like three monumental ones that I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. And every time it happens, I mean, I think the first one... I had just become a full-time creator where like I quit my restaurant job and I was doing brand deals. And I think I just had way too much on my plate, which I always do. But like back then I didn't know how much I could handle until it showed me. And it was like, no more than this. Yeah. And I think I just like had probably a panic attack or just crying or something like that. And then, my second burnout was just never taking a break. Like I just was always on, always recording. My relationships were failing because it was like what I had prioritized was my relationship with the camera. And it was like, what is the audience getting? And I would like live my life for the video. And like sometimes as an introvert, I wanted to stay in, but my vlog for the week, because I used to do two videos per week on YouTube. And my vlog for the week, I didn't do anything interesting. So I was like, well, I have to go do something now. And then I would like be out on Hollywood Boulevard doing something crazy just for the video. And it's like,
this is a curse of the vlog.
Yeah, I know. And I was like, this isn't it for me. And so it's like every time I do have a burnout, I learn a little bit more about what I want to do. Cause after that I was like, oh, okay, I'm not putting my relationship online. I'm not going to vlog around my friends and I'm not going to do something I don't want to do. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, with those parameters, now what do I want to do? Okay, I'll just do talking head setups. And then it's like, from there, what do you want to do? Okay, now I start to find like design and fashion lifestyle. And it's like, okay, every burnout gets me a little closer to like things that are not going to burn me out.
Yes. Exactly. You just have to learn the hard way. Some things you have to learn the hard way.
I know. Okay. Unfortunately. Your turn, your burnout turn.
Okay. So I felt like my whole life has just always been about like, how can you be more productive?
Yes.
How can you do more?
Yes.
Like you live your life by like, let's do more.
Oh my God.
You know? And it's like, it's just drilled into you, both in American culture and in like Asian culture. It's just drilled into you in every direction.
Yes.
And it's just how I want to naturally be seen and perceive myself and all that and productivity hacks and all that. So, and so the first time I hit the point where it was too much was I had like a small production company, a small video production company, and I had 4 employees and I did not realize how stressful it would be to have employees.
Yeah.
Everyone tells you, and I was not prepared for it.
People tell you? I didn't know that either.
I don't know. Everyone told me how stressful it would be to have employees. And I knew it would be bad, but I didn't know it would be that bad.
Wait, okay. Say more about that. Because for me, I think I just work whenever I like have the creative stimulation to. And so having set hours, I think is the hardest part for me to be like, if I don't do something, then this person doesn't get paid.
Yes. Okay. So I think having employees... brought out in me, I think, a very deep-seated fear that was not tested before, which is a financial stress. So I there's some people with a certain personality type where they just, it's like no amount of money could make them feel safe. Like you can just never have enough money. You're always like saving for a rainy day. You're always worried about like losing everything. And like, I just fall into that. And so I think what was really stressing me out was the fact that so much money was leaving my bank account every month to pay employees. I didn't realize how stressful that would be because it makes it so that you have to close this business. You just have to. Otherwise, you're going to start bleeding like tons and tons of money. And so that, I think, really freaked me out. And I wasn't psychologically prepared for that. Mm-hmm. I also wasn't prepared for, okay, one, so your employees become your financial dependents, but they also, in many ways, become your emotional dependents. Because when you're just working with contractors, then they're not expecting to get all their career fulfillment from you because they're doing lots of different projects and they just need to be fulfilled in that one project. Mm-hmm. But if someone is your employee, then, well, they're pegging their career to you. And so you need to give them career fulfillment. Mm-hmm. And career fulfillment is very tied in emotion. And so I didn't expect all of this emotional kind of relationship now. And so I think both of those things stressed me out incredibly much. And it just got to a point where it was affecting my health. And so it was like, I started developing like tingling in my hands that started really stressing me out. That really worried me. And it turned out to be fine. But you know, I've had it for years actually. But I was just getting all these physical symptoms of stress. And then there was just one night where I like just threw up from stress. And that was the first time that had ever happened. And I was like, oh, whoa. I think I'm actually stressed.
Yeah.
Because before then, I think I was stressed, but I didn't even realize it. I was like, okay, got under control. Like things are fine. I'm going to do this, going to do this. You're just in such problem solving mode that you don't even feel the stress.
100%.
And then your body is just like, I'm going to throw up now.
Because
like,
you're not listening.
You are stressed.
Yeah.
I'm going to make sure you listen. I'm like, okay, I think I'm actually stressed.
Loud and clear.
So then I was like, okay, I need to make some changes. So that was the first time that I burned out. And so... so now I'm solo, and I think that's like much better for me. And I feel like I actually almost hit a burnout very, very recently. And what happened there was I just had a really stressful work project. And normally my work projects are not that stressful because I give myself a lot of margin of error. But this particular project was just really stressful. Sometimes you can't avoid it. And then it triggered this cycle of insomnia for me.
Oh.
And insomnia, I just do not deal well with at all. And then, so once I have insomnia, then it's like, I can do so much less.
Totally.
Like, I feel like I can normally handle like 10 medium-sized tasks a day. And then, you know, one large task and 10 medium-sized tasks a day. And then when I have insomnia, I can like barely handle two small tasks.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, it's just like, it's totally crippling for me. And so I'm just now getting out of that. And I'm just like, okay, like... these things can destroy me like overnight practically. So I need to kind of balance my workload and start being a lot more selective about what I say yes to. And so this is like, I'm recalibrating because I feel like you always, the level at which you have to start being more selective can increase rapidly if like things are blowing up. Like I'm sure for you, when the Netflix show blew up, then all this stuff started coming your way and you had to like recalibrate.
Yeah.
You know,
when, yeah, I have so much to say about that, understanding what to say yes and no to, because I'm like barely understanding that. Because like right now, I'm notorious for just saying yes to everything. I will say no to something if I don't think there's any value for either party, like in the long term. But like sometimes I will act out of scarcity of being like, yeah, I'll take that because like I need that money. Because what if all of this falls down, you know, like what if Instagram like shuts down for some reason, or like, you know, it's like, I do have kind of a stable income because like I'm my own boss, but at the same time, it's like, well, if the brands aren't coming in, then I'm not going to get paid this month. And how am I going to afford my mortgage and my car and my rental property? Like I've got a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I just like need to continually bring in income because I don't know when I'm going to fall off, quote unquote. And like, I've been telling my team for like the longest time, like I've always been like, yeah, I'm about to fall off. So like, what's my exit strategy? I've been saying that for like 5 years and like it, I just keep on growing. So it's like, even my therapist was like, where is this coming from? Like, why do you always think that like it's not going to last? Or why do you think it's going to fail when every year a new opportunity that's better and more aligned with your direction is happening? And I'm like, I don't know.
It's probably something deep seated in your childhood.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. For sure. Like everything.
It's like all the evidence in the world could point to this not happening, but you'll still feel this way. And I completely relate to it, but I agree. I think, you know, I'm often operating from a scarcity mindset when I say, oh, I'm operating from an abundant mindset when really I'm just like aspirationally abundant mindset. Like I'm not actually, I'm pretending. So I'm trying to get myself to actually be in an abundant mindset.
Yes.
So that I really can like default to saying no to things and just focus on the few things that like really, really make sense. And so that's that. I mean, it's an incredible position to be in. Like, I think it's a really, these are all like amazing problems.
Of course.
And I feel like very privileged to be in this situation. But I think, you know, it is, you just have to, I think there's such a strong cultural societal pressure to just always do more. Mm. And that's not how I'm going to live my happiest life.
No, it's interesting because like the more that I do, the more I burnt out I get. But something that like I really enjoy is being productive. And like whenever I finish a task, I feel so good about myself. Or like when I finish a room or when I do a full day of admin, or like yesterday I designed for 9 hours graphics for a different company. I was like, wow, I crushed that. And I feel so good about it. But the better I feel about like more work getting done, the less my soul is like refreshed. So it's this weird dichotomy of like, how do I balance that? Where like I get a high from like being productive, but if I'm too productive, then I burn out. So like, I gotta find my threshold, I guess.
Yeah.
Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
When you are about to burn out, you said that you felt like you were almost at a burnout very recently. What do you do in order to like back yourself off from the ledge?
Yeah. So I think I actually am a little less prone to burnout than others. And I think it's because my body does not tolerate that much. So like, I think there's some people who can just push themselves so hard. I know someone who literally he was like really sick. This was pre-COVID days, so he was just like had a flu or something. And he still like went on a flight and did his pitch and did everything and running in low sleep. And he was literally just walking on the sidewalk, and then he just like collapsed, like passed out on the sidewalk, like just fell while walking, in the middle of walking on the sidewalk, just fell and then hit his head and had to have stitches. So like that's how hard some people can push themselves. They will literally push themselves to the point of collapse. Whoa. And then I feel like I'm the opposite, where like, as soon as I just get 6 hours of sleep instead of eight, as soon as the smallest thing, my whole body goes out of whack and it's just like, no, like my body is just like, no, you're not allowed to do that. And so I'm just like, okay, fine.
Oh, that's good.
Like my body has always sort of like dictated things and ruled things and prevented myself from pushing myself too hard. And so it's like, my body doesn't even let me get to that point of extreme burnout. It's like pre-burning out. So it's like, you can't, you're not even allowed to hit that wall.
Right, it's like bumpers in bowling.
Yeah. We're going to break you before, like you're going to hit the brakes before you can even get to that point. So my burnouts have not been quite as dramatic, but I feel like I'm just constantly, I don't know. I'm just forced to listen to my body because it affects me so much.
Yeah.
And that's also why I don't do that much. That's also why I don't like put out content as often, and I'm not on as many platforms, and I'm not gonna like go start a merch line and a podcast and a like all these other things, because I know realistically I don't have the energy to do all that stuff at once.
Yeah, I definitely don't think doing everything is sustainable, and I learned that the hard way because this whole career has been really as like rewarding and like exciting as it is to always be transitioning and pivoting, it's so confusing at the same time. And you're like, where am I going to put all my eggs in one basket? Or am I going to put an egg here, an egg here, an egg here? And then all of my attention is bifurcated. And then it's like, where do I, like, how do you balance all of it being one person? And I think that's when like the employees do come in, and it's like, how sustainable is it to do everything? It's not. And so what I've learned is like, I've definitely scaled back. Like I started doing, I started YouTube doing 2 videos a week and then a podcast every week. And then it was just like, okay, every other week I do a podcast, every other week I do a YouTube video. And that's the only way that I can stay sane and still, you know, make money and make cool things at the same time of making like a good life for myself. Mm-hmm. It's been...
Yeah, you're doing a lot. I mean, you're doing all the content creation and you're doing a full-time job of stuff on top of that.
Yeah, I'm wondering like...
And school. Like, I'm actually not entirely sure how you're doing. Like, how are those hours in the day adding up for you exactly?
I don't know. It's like, it's so funny because it's like one corner of my room is like super clean and then everything is a mess. And I think that's just like what my brain is too. It's like, yeah, we have everything in order over here, but over there, it's like a trash can on fire. It's like, whoa. Oh my God. But one thing I wanted to ask you too is like, you also do a ton of things and you've transitioned a couple times over the years. What is it like to transition and what are the steps that you take in order to like make that leap? Because like leaping from one thing that you feel safety in and like that you've like, you feel like you have kind of control over it and you're like, okay, I want to do this other thing. Leap and the net will appear. But the more that you grow and the more that you get successful, that leap is no longer like a lateral leap. It's like, oh, sometimes we're leaping down, but it's for something that's like better for us or, you know, something we're taking a risk on. So like, what's your mindset when you're going through those transitions?
Yeah, I think this is such a good thing for you to bring up because I know you've gone through many of these leaps.
Yes.
As well. So I think the first one is the hardest. The first career change or transition or content pivot or whatever, the first time you have to pivot in life, it's the hardest because you have probably at that point identified yourself by this thing. Mm-hmm. Like think about your Twitter bio or your Instagram bio or your the first thing people ask you when they meet you. Like we all are forced to label ourselves in society and usually we label ourselves by our profession. And so when you change the thing that you do, you're not only changing your job, but you're sort of having to change your identity and changing what you call yourself. Yeah. And so the first time that happens, it's very scary. But I think I was just so unhappy doing it that I was like, I have to, because I couldn't tolerate doing what I was doing before anymore. And then every transition after that is a little less scary. I think for me, I'm such a novelty seeker. Like I'm so drawn to new things. And that allows me to pivot because actually trying new things gives me energy. And so in some degree, pivoting, even though it's exhausting, also gives me energy. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think for many people, doing new things drains them. I think this is, you know, a different type of person is more of a craftsperson who like they really gain energy from really refining one skill and building it over years and years and sometimes decades. That's a different personality type where like pivoting would really not be give them energy in any way whatsoever. And so I think it's very much like a personality or energy kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm very similar. The novelty thing is huge for me because I think that that's also why I like to do transformations a ton because it's like this room is like dreadful and then I redo it and then it's like so fun to be in. And then I'm like, oh, this is so great. I love it so much. And then I look around the corner and I'm like, oh, well, that's kind of drab. And then I redo that room. And so there's so many people online that are like, do you just keep on redoing your rooms because you like it or because like there's a something deep down that you like don't want to confront? And I'm like, no, I know. They've said that. Oh my God. I'm like, no. I'm already confronting those things. But like, I love it. And I'm always mid project because my brain is just like so many creative ideas and they always keep changing. So it's like, once I do a room, go to the next room, and then I come back to the initial room and I'm like, oh, well, this could have like a little bit better. And then I start to do the refinement for that room. So it's like, it's kind of both, but the novelty thing is huge. I have one of my closest friends. I think she, I don't know if it was like an ADHD seminar or like ebook or something, but it was saying that to buy like a new pen is that will like satiate the novelty to like, if you need to work on something, but you don't want to get something that will make it a little bit more exciting, which has been really cool. Cause I've done that every now and then, like, oh, I'm going to get like a new, you know, putty knife. And it's, it helps a lot being like, oh yeah, I'm going to like now trowel this entire wall. It makes it a little bit more exciting. And I think that's like a cool little tip, I guess, if you are listening and you're similar in terms of like needing novelty to do things that you don't want to do. That's been really helpful.
I'm curious for you because you've pivoted while having a following. So I've only pivoted before having a following, really. Ever since I got a social media following, I haven't really pivoted. But I'm maybe about to slightly, but not drastically. But I'm curious for you because you've pivoted drastically with a following. And all traditional advice would say that that's terrible for engagement and social media numbers and all that. So I'm really curious to hear about what that whole thing was like for you.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like in the very beginning when I started social media, it was, I think it was only dance in the very beginning. So that was fine. But I had to pivot once I was on this internet show called Internet Icon. And it was like American Idol, but for like YouTube. And so once I was on that show, I had gained, I think, maybe 30,000 followers from it. And I had to merge those two audiences. And so I was like, okay, these people want to see me dance. These people want to see my personality. How am I going to make this work? And so I would still make dance videos, but then I would put sketch comedy in the beginning, at the end, kind of bookending it to go, everybody's satiated. And then when people started to get a little bit more into the personality thing, I just like just did personality stuff. But then I remember someone saying that I needed to do one thing on YouTube to grow. And I did so many things. And so I was like, okay, fine. I guess the cooking videos do the best. And so I just did cooking videos for a little while. And then I ended up hating it because it was putting myself in a box. And like that, I've learned that that's not the thing for me. And even like with design, like I'm definitely like honing in on it now. But I think what I need to realize is like the people that came for the personality and maybe they don't give a shit about design, I need to be able to speak to all audiences, like the people that do like artistry and design and architecture, but also like someone down to earth and messy and real, you know, like, and like put those two together. And I think that would do well for me because I don't know if there's a lot of designers online that show their personality because it's so visual and it's so product oriented that it's like, okay, maybe that's like carving my own niche. You know, like I just came across this idea yesterday, but the transition between that, it was very much like, I remember like posting online, like that I'm not going to dance anymore. And it was like a whole thing. Like people, it was almost like a RIP to the old me in a way. And a lot of people came for that. And so it's like, I'm sorry if you came for that, but like, I'm not going to hold myself into what I think that everybody else wants just because it'll keep my engagement up. It'll keep me relevant. It's like, I would hate if I only did that for the following. And so it's like, and I think it's like, especially when you post something that's a little bit, I guess divisive, or you post anything political, it's like you're gonna lose followers. But if you speak up for what you actually believe in, then you'll find the like-minded people that you want your community and tribe to be anyway. So I think that's kind of the leap that I had to take with like, okay, I'm not gonna dance anymore and I'm only gonna post this stuff. And I think I went like really far. I always go really far. When I make a transition, I'm like, okay, I'm going to go all the way. Instead of like, there's a thing called the 2 millimeter rule that I learned in a self-development seminar. And it was based off of the instructor's friend who was a surgeon. And everyone that would come in would want like a drastic change to their face. And then the surgeon would be like, absolutely not. I will not work on you if you want anything more than 2 millimeters of a change.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. Because he was like, usually all that it takes is such a slight pivot, but people think that it needs to be so much more. So they end up becoming looking like a different person because they didn't keep what made them them and just tweak very ever so slightly. It would just be too drastic. And so I think what I do kind of all the time is like go really intense and then I have to scale back. And by the time I scale back, I realize that it was only a 2 millimeter difference. So yeah, I mean, I guess I'm still making that transition and it is scary because people have come and I have amassed a following from one thing, but I think, I think what I've learned through like kind of multiple transitions is that when people come because of one thing, they end up staying because of the personality and the fun and like the relatability. And so I feel like as long as I don't lose that, regardless if I'm designing or working on cars or like, you know, anything, as long as I don't lose that thing or anyone doing anything, if you find what makes you you and you can pivot to do whatever you love, but as long as you don't lose what makes you you, I think that's the most important thing is what I'm learning.
Yeah. I think for me, it's been, I think it's for me, it's just been about like, making peace with losing followers, like with that just being okay and actually in some ways good.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, so for example, on my account, I actually churn, I lose 1,000 followers every single day.
Okay.
So I'm, so in order for me to stay at zero, I have to also gain 1,000 followers every single
day.
Right. And so the, I'm going to lose followers no matter what. And then on the days that I post things, I actually lose more followers because people will see the content and be like, eh, not for me, and unfollow.
Oh.
But then when I, if I post that thing then and it does well, then with, you know, over the course of several days, then I might gain way more followers than I lost.
Right.
But I think I've learned over time that like it is okay to lose followers and it's actually a good thing. Because you actually want people to unfollow you if they're not interested in your content. It's actually better for your page than if people are just sort of like dormantly sticking around but never engaging. And so I think someone described to me as like an audience is a revolving door. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, let me not have the expectation that I need to amass this audience. I need to hang on to every single person.
Yeah.
Let me instead have the expectation that this is just a revolving door and some people are going to stay in for a while longer. Some people are going to stay in a real long time and some people are just going to go in and out. And that's just normal.
Yeah.
And it was actually my, it was actually my agent who told me this. So he's worked with many, many people with much larger followings than me. So he has like a sort of, you know, larger kind of view of things.
Right.
And so when he told me that, I was like, okay, it truly is okay to just lose followers. Because I'm going to keep doing my most popular series, like the most of my followers come from my DIY camera hacks series.
Yeah.
And frankly, like I've used all my best ideas for that. I don't have another DIY camera hack video currently planned. Like at some point, maybe I'll come up with some ideas and do another one. But like that's, it's not my current interest to do that.
Yeah.
And I know that like when I post videos that are not that, people who follow me for that reason are not going to like it as much and they might not engage or they might unfollow me. And that's okay. Like that is their choice, how they want to spend their time and their interest. And so I think I've just had to like really make peace with that because if I came up with more of another DIY camera hack video right now, it would just sort of be rehashing my old stuff.
Right.
And I don't, that doesn't give me excitement or interest. So it's like, if I keep doing the thing that people followed me for, I know the quality would decline. What I really need to do is I need to do new things and different things that I'm proud of and that may not be a fit for them. And that is okay.
Yeah. How many times have you in the past like made content that you think that your followers would like, but you were like, I feel like okay about this, but I know that they will like it. What's your, I guess, your barometer for creation?
Yeah, it's interesting. So my most successful video on Instagram, as measured by number of followers, is a video that I made called low budget shots with household objects. And I got over 300,000 followers from that one.
Holy shit.
On Instagram. Yeah.
That's crazy conversion.
Right. Yeah. Well, I got it. So I did the whole strategy where I got it reposted on a bunch of pages. And then I got reposted on 9gag. It got like 30 million views on 9gag. And then that probably, that brought in a huge number of followers. I basically did every trick in the book that I knew to get the followers. And then that that time it just really blew up for me. Now that video, before I released it, I was like, I hate this. This is like not, this is really not representative of a quality that I want to put out in the world.
Yeah.
This is not my best work. And truthfully, I would have cut it. I would have not released it. But it was a client project for Adobe, so I had to release
it. Wow.
So the thing that like I'm best known for is not was not even a video that I was proud of. But I'm proud of it now because I'm like, I guess it did great.
Whoa.
But if it had flopped in terms of numbers, I would have been like, man, that kind of sucked.
Right.
So, I mean, it's so hard to be your own judge. But the thing is, I think the reason why it did so well, actually, is exactly the reason why I wasn't proud of it, in the sense that I think the shots were really relatable. Because the shots didn't look too good and too professional, people were like, cool, I could do that.
Right.
And that's useful and relatable to people. And that's valuable in its own way.
Yeah, I mean, I think relatability, I think, is the key thing. Like, I always thought it was authenticity. And I still think that that's very high. But if I were to put one, I don't know, modality, one, like, thing, element that is, like, the all being right now in social sphere, would be that, like, anything that is relatable and people can use and find value in their everyday life. Like, if I were to do, I mean, this is like, maybe I should think about this. So like, how to style anything like a shelf, or how to like make your key bowl look less crazy, you know, whatever. I would come up with better titles than that. But like things that like are actually useful versus like, watch me do this whole room. Like, that's what gives me value, and like I love that, and right now I'm developing my portfolio, but I should probably, if I was a good content creator, I would start very small, like very like easy things that anyone could do with their house no matter where they live.
Right. So this tension is like, I feel like this is increasing tension where almost like the better something is, the less relatable it is.
Yeah.
So this is especially in the filmmaking world, but probably you see it in design as well, is like the most talented filmmakers who are creating these incredibly, like, technically gorgeous shots, those videos get way fewer views than, like, my simple little iPhone shot.
Yeah.
And it's just because it's not relatable. People can't see themselves doing it, even though technically they're, like, top of their field.
Mm-hmm.
And then so when I am making stuff and I want to make something look better, it's like, well, I want to make it look better, and that's actually going to make it perform worse.
Right.
Right? And so lately I've just been like, that's okay. I'm going to make it look better anyway, because that's what I want to
do.
And like, I'm going to make content that I know, like, going forward, my goal over the next few months is actually to make content because I think it's good. And oftentimes that means it's going to look more professional, polished. And that means it's going to perform worse in social media. But ultimately, you know, I have an audience, but my paying audience is a very, very, very small percentage of my audience that are like marketers who could hire me.
Yeah.
And they actually appreciate the, you know, something that's a little more technical or professional.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think for me, I'm not like, I guess I'm more rebalancing my portfolio. Like, I'm probably going to do less of the iPhone stuff. I'm not going to get away from it entirely because I genuinely enjoy doing it. But I'm just not only going to pump out that. I'm going to do what my genuine interests are, even though I know it's going to be less numbers.
Yeah. I think I saw somewhere on one of those analytics pages that your followers break down into like four different categories. And I only remember two of them, but they were saying like followers, the people that like you for your content and want to like ingest it. And there's also the buyers of the people, like you said, like the people that are going to actually pay you, the leads for your jobs. And so it's like, what we have to do is like, have a balance of it, like polished shots, iPhone shots, and then anything in between. Just playing the game always. It's a fun game if you gamify it, which I should. I should sit down and like really think of it like a game, because if anything is a game, I want to win.
Exactly. Yeah, I feel like with all these promotions and growth hacks and stuff, like you have to find what about it makes it fun for
you. Totally.
Otherwise, it's just exhausting.
It really is.
Like, I remember when Clubhouse was really hot and everyone was in Clubhouse, like getting all the growth hack advice. And I'm just like, I'm exhausted in here listening to all this advice.
Oh my God. I remember that. That was like, where is it still happening now? Clubhouse?
No. I mean, yeah, it's still happening, but not as much. Yeah.
I remember being on it in the very beginning and being in all of the growth hack rooms and then taking notes and then trying to implement them. And it was like, this isn't for me. Like, I'm not this thinker. Like, I'm creative and I have like a very type A mentality when it comes to organization. But like, I don't know. I feel like that's a skill set that I do not have. But before we end, I really want to ask one last question. And this can go any way that you want, but since you've had like so many different avenues in your journey, but if you could give one piece of advice for anyone that is a creative or wants to be a creative in any sort of capacity, what is your kind of like life motto or advice that you would give to them?
Okay, my advice is don't take anyone's advice that seriously.
Oh, I love that.
Okay, so which is like funny because it's like, why would you even listen to that? If I'm telling you? But anyway, it's sort of meta. But like, what I'm saying is like, everyone's going to have their growth hacks and tips and advice for you. But everyone is going to give you that advice from their lens in which they lived life. They're a different age from you. They lived life under different circumstances from you. They have a different personality from you. They have different interests from you. So everyone's giving you advice based on how they live their life. And so don't take anyone's advice too seriously. And I would say just go and get advice from lots of different people. And then just take whatever actually feels right. But don't take anyone's word for what it is. Because like even I can give you all my growth hacks and like guess what? That worked for me for a specific period of time, for a specific set of circumstances, for a specific personality. So, you know, I'm about to give like this whole, I'm about to make this whole series, which is like how I grew on Instagram. Now, the title is how I grew on Instagram. It's not how you can grow on Instagram.
Totally.
I'm just giving an example of what worked for me. And so the best thing you can do is just really observe and experiment and figure out what works for your personality.
I love it. When is it coming out?
Probably in mid-September. When is this coming out?
Next week.
Okay, cool.
Okay, all so right. Yeah. So, okay. So it's called How I Grew on Instagram.
It's how I grew to 1 million followers on Instagram.
Oh my God.
That's coming in mid-September.
So exciting. Okay. Cannot wait to do that. And hopefully I can grow to 1 million on Instagram.
Oh, that's happening for you.
Thank you so much for listening. All of Karen's socials are in the show notes. If you want to see more of her filmmaking and follow her. If you want to hear a specific topic or have any other people that you would love to hear on Just a Tip, DM me at Just a Tip Podcast on Instagram, and we will see you next time. Bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.